You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. My guest today is Liz Jenkins. Liz is a great actor who especially loves comedic work. We went to the University of Evansville together years ago, and after going to grad school at UCSD, she has been based in LA. So this conversation was recorded over Skype. I always love catching up with her. Her warmth, her humor, and her outlook on being an artist are inspiring to me, and I'm excited to share our conversation with you. I hope you enjoy the 44th episode of The Compass. What is the dark side for you, and how do you try to avoid going there as an artist?
I would say I have a few little dark sides. I have like a dark room in a small apartment in LA I go to a couple times a month. I think the dark side is going to definitely be losing confidence in myself as an actor and forgetting that I don't need to book something to equal success. That's like something I struggle with a lot. Like, I'm sure a lot of actors do. You go into an audition, you do everything you're supposed to do beforehand, you memorize your lines, you warm up, you work on the beats and get it set the way you want it to get set. You go in the room, you do your best, and you don't hear anything at all. And sometimes that can immediately make me go to that dark place and feeling like, okay, what did I do wrong? What could I have done better? Just losing confidence. And I have to just pull myself out of there and remind myself that everything I did right was a success and that the booking doesn't equal Liz is nailing it. Liz is nailing it is being able to leave the room and be like, I left it all in there. I did the best I could. So that's one of the little aspects of the dark place. And I think another thing that's going on in that dark room is comparing myself to others around me and just remembering. I think a girlfriend of mine who used to be a casting director told me very early on when I moved to LA that, you know, the big unique thing about yourself is yourself. So it sounds really basic and really simple, but it's a hard concept to accept as actors, I think, because in a weird, funky way, acting is unfortunately competitive. You're going up against someone else. But like she said, and like I try to remember all the time, being unique and being Liz Jenkins is what's going to book me a role or get a part or whatever in most situations. It's not me trying to fit into some mold that's not who I am. And yeah. I've actually found that it's easier for me to hide the dark things that I was talking about earlier about confidence. It's actually easier for me to leave feeling confident if I know that I was myself versus if I went into a room and I didn't feel like I was bringing the best Liz Jenkins that there is there. I get disappointed when I leave and I'm like, that's not what I would have done. That's actually, I was trying to fit into something that wasn't me.
Right.
That's more disappointing than anything, but
it's easy to go down that road though of like of what do they want me to be?
Yeah, it's so easy to want to do that, especially when you get a script and there's a description there and it kind of fits you or it kind of doesn't fit you, the little breakdown that's like 20 to late 30s or whatever, and it's like African American. Sometimes it says heavy set and I'm like, okay, they have some ridiculous crap that they want me to
right
what are be some silly big girl and I have to always remind myself like, well, I wouldn't describe myself as heavy set, so I'll immediately take that label off of that breakdown. And it's definitely easy to want to fit into their mold, but the more you can try to just stay in your own mold and bring that character to life, the better it is for you, the better it is for them, but most importantly for you. I think those are the two darkest places that I go to, I think, as an actor.
Yeah, and so to try to avoid them feeling like yourself and that just being as, like, prepared as possible.
Yeah.
Those are some of the ways you keep out of it.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the best things that I do for every audition is I'm off book. That might sound like this B. She's so special. She's memorizing her lines, but
no, it's one less thing to worry about, though.
One less thing to worry about, and believe it or not, not everyone does it. You'd be surprised how many people I'm assuming go into a room and they're holding onto that paper for dear life, or they're looking down on it, and it just doesn't help you. It's one less thing that's keeping you back from connecting with the casting director or reader or whomever. That's like my first step of, Liz, get off book. Even if that's all you do, if that's all you have time for, get your ass off book. Is there cursing on this?
By the way? Yeah, go for it. I don't mind.
I'll try not to, but on my lady time. So sometimes the curse words fly out of my mouth.
It's totally fine.
I had an audition the other day for a really cool casting director who's casting a film. And when I was done, he was like, thank you for being off book. You're like one of two people that were off book. And I don't think I booked that part, but I left feeling really proud of myself because I was like, he knows that I'm professional.
Yeah.
He knows that I took it seriously and that I came in there and I wanted to play.
And he'll probably remember you.
Yeah, and he'll remember me. Exactly. And I think there, when I first moved to LA, there were a handful of auditions where I just didn't click for me yet. So I was going out and not being completely off book, and it sucked. It really sucked to have to rely on that piece of paper and just to have to focus so much on the dialogue on the paper versus the emotions that the actor's feeling. It just didn't feel good. So that's my first little step. And then an actor friend of mine, who I used to work with, Ty Burrell. He's a really, really great guy. Working for him for a couple of years, like, super grounded me as an actor and specifically as a comedian.
Yeah.
He gave me the great advice of going into the room, being yourself, being off book, of course, but then also, like, bringing myself out, even if it's not written on the paper. And I've had some super fun callbacks and just auditions doing that. And I would never in a million years, I'm not suggesting that everyone goes out there and says, like, forget the script, I'm going to make up my own lines. But, you know, if it's written on a piece of paper and someone's like, oh, fudge, and you would never say, oh, fudge, don't say, oh, fudge. Say what you would say. It's not, worst case scenario, they're going to say, can you do it again and just stay to the script? Like, that's really the worst case scenario. And I do that in auditions all the time now, and I feel so much better. It's just one little extra nugget of bringing myself to the table, especially with comedy, because yeah, comedy is so, you need to feel it in your bones. You can't just be like a little robot and say what is on the paper and not have any attachment to it.
Right.
So yeah, I think those things help to not feel, to feel competent when I leave the room.
And some ownership.
Oh, totally. It goes back to kind of, what is the little saying, leaving it all out on the floor?
Mm-hmm.
Like, goes back to that little saying, like, if you go in there and you're yourself and you're bringing, if I'm bringing myself to the table, that's all I can do. Like, period. There's no more that I can, there's nothing else I can do. I can just be myself, be the best version of myself, look pretty if I can, and still up to it, and leave it all out there on the floor. And yeah, that's a lot. It's kind of a control thing too. Like, I can control being myself. I can't control going in a room and trying to fit myself into a hole that I don't, you know, naturally fit into.
Right. And out there in LA, are you mostly auditioning for on-camera stuff?
Especially
that kind of improv-ing is much more accepted and those kinds of scripts, right?
Yeah, I mostly go out for film and television here. I do miss theater. Training in theater, I probably could not do what I do here without that training, but I miss it so much. But yeah, being in LA, I bet most people would say that they're usually going out for film and television or commercials. And yeah, being able to improv a little bit and have a bit of a background in improv helps a ton, especially when you get an adjustment. I think improv mixed with training equals I can do an adjustment really, really quickly.
Yeah.
And not feel like thrown off by it.
Have you trained in improv while you've been out there?
Yeah, I went to UCB for all of their levels, and I loved that program. It was really, you know, specific improv school, and I had so much fun doing it. I had such great teachers, and I met great people there, and I performed on, like, a few little indie, they call them indie improv teams, where you're not, like, on a team at a school, but you're kind of doing it, you know, in the different comedy theaters around town. And then I took a huge break from improv. It just, something all of a sudden wasn't fun for me with improv. And still to this day, I can't pinpoint what it was, but I just needed a little bit of a break. And I thought during that break that I would explore stand-up, and I did like a few open mics, and I had a great time doing that, but still I wasn't connecting to it. And now I'm actually studying at Groundlings, and I love that program. I do find that I like, it's kind of a character-based program, and I love it. It's definitely bringing back some of the things that I got from undergrad theater and graduate school theater and mixing it with improv. And I'm like, okay, I think that's a little bit what was missing. Like, that's, I miss being able to layer on my training on top of improv.
So the UCB was more based on, like, just the scenarios, like, sketch?
I would say it's hard to generalize specifically what it was, but UCB almost had, like, a formula to it. It was kind of about, there's building beats were involved, and I liked it, and it was super difficult to catch on and get it, but once you did, it was super fun and very funny, but it wasn't character-based or character-driven, I would say, whereas Groundlings definitely is that. And I think they're really like, this is what we do. This is the Groundlings way. And I think that's probably the big difference in those two programs. So yeah, I think being able to play with characters, like, I was always a huge fan of Saturday Night Live and Mad TV and, and Living Color and this amazing show called House of Duggan, which was, do you remember that show?
No.
Oh my God, it was John Leguizamo's, like, sketch comedy show. I want to say it was the early 90s, and I loved House of Duggan.
I love him. Was it on cable? Because we didn't have cable growing up. Maybe that was why.
I want to say it was, like, on UPN or
something. Oh,
like,
maybe. Okay, I'm going to have to go to YouTube.
That don't exist anymore. maybe it was, like, the WB. I feel, like, strongly that it was the WB for some reason. But anyway, it was, like, John Leguizamo's version of In Living Color, kind of, and it was super high energy show, and all of the sketches were really, like, super edgy, and I loved that show, and I was, but lots of huge characters, but also, you know, edgy and topical, and I have always been drawn to that kind of improv and sketch comedy. I've definitely gotten my foot more, you know, my toes are dipping in the sketch comedy world now. Which is the show that I'm working on with my girlfriend, is kind of, you know, it's like an extended sketch.
Can you tell me a little bit about the web series and what you guys are working on?
My girlfriend Molly Fite and I met at graduate school at UCSD, and I think our first day of school we had to do these, like, monologues or something, and I thought this girl was so funny. She was just so naturally funny. And from that day forward, I think we just were, like, constantly making each other laugh, like, competing with each other in this, like, hilarious way. She's just so funny, and our sense of humors are so similar. So when we graduated and we moved here, you know, the first thing that we decided was we needed to write together. We were going to write something. And this was, what, 8 years ago? This was way, I think, before people were consistently making their own work. And, like, this was before YouTube. I mean, maybe not before it existed, but before it was, like, a popular place for people to throw up web series. And we started writing. And we were writing about literally exactly what was happening in our lives. So I was working at a dog hotel right out of grad school, cleaning up dog piss. And I think she was waitering and serving a lot. And we hated it, of course. It was miserable. We were treated like crap. And it was just funny to us that, you know, I mean, it had to be funny, right? It was either funny or depressing.
Right.
So we chose funny. And so we got together and we would literally write, like, the day I got fired from the doggy daycare, we sat down and we wrote it out. And of course, it's not exactly how it happened, but right. It was pretty close. This was like 8 years ago, and we wrote these things out, and we just got super busy with life. You know, we had to pay rent and pay bills, and auditions picked up, and I think Molly got into the comedy world more intensely, so we were really busy. And I want to say, like, a couple years ago, I was going out for comedy auditions, but I never get called back for comedy things, or I get called back and really close, and I don't book it. And I was like, something is not... I mean, I know I'm funny, so why am I not working on comedy shows? Mm-hmm. And I was really frustrated by it, and I started to think, I actually got really bitter towards, like, a lot of the comedy people that I love, like, you know, Judd Apatow films, and I love David Wayne, and, like, Wet Hot American Summer. I got really bitter because I was like, oh, these are, like, little clubs. Like, they all know each other, and it's hard to, like, break into those clubs.
Right.
And especially when you're a huge fan of their work, I was like, what do I do? Do I tweet at them? Like, what's my demo reel? Like, how do I get into these rooms and meet these comedic casting directors and comedians that I love? And I just, something clicked a couple years ago, and I was like, I guess I just gotta make my own club, my own little comedy club with people that I think are funny and start producing our own work. Like, that's how you do it. So Molly and I got back together and started writing, and it was almost as if, like, it was just easier this time around. We wrote so many episodes so quickly. We met once a week and we would just crank them out, and you would, like, find us in a coffee shop in Burbank and just, like, cracking each other up. And you know, the show is rated R, so we're talking about, like, dicks and, like, having sex with clowns in the middle of a coffee shop. And we were just having so much fun. And so that's how work came about. And we finished writing it, and we decided that we wanted to film it. And of course, filming anything now, because creating your work is so, your own work is so popular now, you really have to do it right. Like, you can't slap it together, and you can't do it on an iPhone shaky. You know, you have to have all these technical tools to make it look really professional for it to be taken seriously. So now we're in the fundraising stage, and then we're going to start filming soon. And it's just the most exciting thing since I've moved to LA is this web series that we've created, because I think it kind of is a summary of my entire experience in LA, the struggle of trying to get into comedy, of trying to be myself in comedy. I mean, I'm essentially playing myself in this show, kind of like a heightened version of it, but and Molly's playing herself, but it's just the struggle of being in LA with a huge, hilarious blanket tossed over it. We make fun of ourselves, we make fun of, you know, our jobs, and it should be a lot of fun. We're looking forward to filming it, and just, I mean, ridiculous is probably the word I would put on
top. I can't wait to see it. How many episodes are you planning to do for the first season?
So we wrote about 8, and I think we're going to film 4. I think we, like, pulled the 4 strongest episodes that I think would be the funnest to film, the episodes that kind of are really clear what our story is. So I think we're going to do 4. I mean, if we raise more money, obviously we'll do a few more, but 4 seems like a nice round number, and that's including the pilot, which is probably going to be the easiest to film because it's just setting everything up. But like I said, you know, you have to compete with some of these web series or, like, things that are on YouTube. I mean, go on YouTube and see what has a lot of views. These things have budgets. Like, huge budgets, like, shockingly impressive budgets. There's this guy that does YouTube videos. I'm forgetting his name, but he does, like, musical parody videos. Hilarious. I think his name's Todrick. Have you heard of him?
Mm-mm. But I'm not big into YouTube, so.
You're not big into YouTube?
No.
Girl.
I'm going to go down a rabbit hole after this, though.
You have to. It's quite important to our careers now that you YouTube. But, yeah, I think his name's Todrick, and he does these huge musical parodies and just, like, I think it's original content. I'm fairly certain. They're, like, expensive. They're, like, Michael Bay movies, but on YouTube for music videos. Their budgets look insane. So you have to compete with that if you want people to watch your little web series, your little comedy about two wacky girls in LA. Like, you gotta have a little bit of a budget. You can't just throw it on.
I mean, that's the daunting part about self-producing to me, is, like, finding the money and doing all the organizational stuff instead of just getting to be the actor or be the creative part.
Totally.
So how has that been so far? How are you guys trying to handle that? Because I know you're also working on other things, obviously, or day jobs or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, if I could quit my day job and just full-time work on work, I think I would still, it would still be exhausting.
Yeah.
I think you're absolutely right. It's so time-consuming. It involves a lot of coordination and a lot of focus and a lot of learning. Like, there's a lot of stuff with SAG, new media, that you kind of have to understand and work with SAG on when you're doing, you know, you can't just go out and do a video on YouTube right now. I mean, SAG is encouraging people, and as they should, to, you know, participate in their new media contract. And that's mostly to protect the actors, but it's also, I mean, it's a learning curve. And it's, yeah, it's, I like it. I say that with a question mark because I like it sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, some days I like wearing the producer hat and I like organizing and figuring out what we will need when we go into the production part of it. And then some days I just want to be an actor and I just want to show up and say random shit on set and, like, be done with it. But I will say it's probably training me better for what I would like my career to look like in the future. Like, just seeing how the business is, and seeing what I go out for as a Black comedian, I think I'm gonna have to be writing for myself a bit more, in order to feel fulfilled.
Yeah.
And that's okay. You know, I am really inspired by that new show Insecure on HBO, with Issa Rae.
Is it already
out? I'm so inspired by her. I'm sorry?
Is that already out, or is it?
I don't think it's out, but I saw a trailer for it, and I was like, yeah, that girl's, yeah, she's doing the right thing.
Yeah, you know? I've heard good things.
Yeah, if she, you know, I have no idea how she came about. I think she was on YouTube, so I'm not sure if she, like, went to acting school and all that stuff. I have no idea, but I can imagine she would feel a lot like me going out for, like, the auditions that I go out for, and, like, my sense of humor, like I said, aligns so much more with, like, Judd Apatow and, like, Wet Hot American Summer. And, like, I just saw the movie Sausage Party and I was like, that's my sense of humor. But it's hard to crack those nuts. And also, it's hard to crack those nuts. I just realized that joke that I made.
Appropriate to Sausage Party.
Yeah, exactly. The movie is hilarious. But that's, like, my sense of humor, and you'd be shocked. I mean, you know me. You know my sense of humor is a little bit odd and, like, kind of raunchy and silly. And the things that I go out for are just not that. Like, so I have to write for myself if I want to be representing myself as a comedian with my perspective, the way we spoke about way earlier. Like, I'm not going to – no one's going to write a role for me that's like Liz Jenkins. Like, yeah. I have to write my own role. So – in that respect of the whole production part of it, I like it because I'm learning for my own future.
Right.
Like, I'm ever going to be the star of Just Jenkins somewhere. Yeah. But yeah, it's fun. And honestly, I think it does seem daunting to people, producing, and specifically producing your own work on something like YouTube. But it's really, once you start doing it, like I said, it's empowering and it's a fun type of control, like to be able to see a vision of a product that you want and to be able to, you know, get it there.
Yeah.
It's like, it's still hard, but I think it's going to be really, really empowering and fulfilling as an actor, to see this whole thing come together.
Had you done much writing before the web series, or has it kind of come out of doing improv and just writing for yourself, or have you written other types of scripts as well?
So I definitely started writing when we started writing. The show was called Chapstick Jungle at first, which is like a play on that old TV show. It was like the opposite. I think that show was about like really successful women. And we were like, that's not us. So I started writing after we started writing that show. And I was writing a screenplay that was about the Renaissance fairs and basically these like MFA trained actors who all work at the same Renaissance fair every summer. And I was writing that script, and I had another silly script about my girlfriends from Houston, and they're all like 75% done. And I always go back to them and go back to the beginning and rewrite. And I just love writing. I don't know if I'm going to finish either of those scripts or what. I kind of don't care, but I do love writing, and it's hard. It's really hard to write full fleshed characters. Even if you're writing based on people, you know, I think I took a writing class and someone was like, try to like write about people, you know? And I was like, I do, but I still don't really write from their voice.
Right.
So that's the hard part about it. But I like it. It's, like I said, writing for yourself, I feel like, is the future of film and television, which is a good thing and a hard thing to accept. I did write some sketches and some little things, and I tried my hand at, like, throwing some little things on YouTube. I had this other silly idea called like really short movie reviews, where it was the shortest sketch possible. I would go see a movie, and then I'd have these long introduction credits, and then my review of the movie was really short. So like I saw Batman versus Superman, and I was like, I liked it. And that was the whole review.
I kind of love that.
You know, like, just, I like things like that, where it's like my sense of humor, really quick, and I'm writing from my own perspective. And that's like kind of a good place to start if anyone wants to like get into writing for themselves, is write like little short monologues just from your own voice, and then go from there and see what else comes out.
Well, and then you get the satisfaction of putting it out into the world too, without having without waiting 2 years to write your epic screenplay.
Well, and those little things that I threw on YouTube, I think they have like 30 views. I don't care. I really don't care. I just did them, and it was fun. And sometimes I'm pretty sure those 30 views are from me, like checking in on different devices and watching them. I don't care. I still think they're funny. Fun to do. And like you said, it was like instant gratification.
Yeah.
I threw it up there. I saw it. It's done. I didn't have to wait for the phone to ring or for someone to tell me that I got something. I did it myself.
Do you think you're in LA for the long term? Because I know, like, obviously you went to school in San Diego, LA is so close, I'm sure you guys had more connections out there.
You know, I don't know if I ever told you this, but I really wanted to come to New York. Yeah. Right after grad school, I told my family that's where I was going. I was dead set on it. I just pictured myself being in New York, trying to do theater, you know, working with all of, you know, our friends from undergrad, like Wes. I wanted to work with Wes so badly, and I was like, I'm going to New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, we have those showcases after grad school, and my showcase in New York was just not, didn't give me a lot of hope for New York. And my showcase in LA was the opposite, which is interesting because my whole mindset was that I didn't think my type would be received very well in LA. And it was the opposite. Like, L.A. really, you know, responded well to me. And I think, I've talked to friends who've done showcases, and I think it does have to do with comedy. I think L.A., you know, after those showcases, they kind of pull comedians in a bit more. I don't know why. But so it was kind of an adjustment for me to accept that I was going to L.A. And I was super fortunate to get, you know, representation across the board, and to start going out immediately and like seeing what life could be like in LA versus, you know, trying to figure it out, and moving.
Right.
And I think because of that shift right after Showcase, I don't know if I get to live in New York, because I like LA so much, and right. I like you know, being here, and I like producing my own work, and I like my friends that are here with me, and I think I could totally go to New York and do what I'm doing right now and, you know, work at a law firm during the day and write at night and audition. I'm sure I could, but I feel like now that I'm in LA, and because I've been here for so long, it's hard to even picture that. Like, I keep thinking, like, a project will have to bring me to New York, which, please, I would love to go to New York. That would be a dream come true. But to answer your question, like, immediately, and as of today, it's hard to think of myself living in New York for some reason now. I have no idea. I can't pinpoint it, but I think it has to do with that shift and that feeling of rejection, I guess, right after grad school, feeling, like, a little rejected by New York, maybe, which I'm sure New York didn't mean it. I'm sure. but I love that city. Every time I go there, I'm up till 4 a.m. with, you know, you guys, and I'm like, God, I want to live here so bad and not sleep and drink coffee all day.
Well, but you're also trying to pack everything into like 3 days when you're
there. Totally. Oh wait, are you saying you guys don't
we
stay
don't
up till 4
I don't normally stay
day.
Up until 4 a.m.
I like that aspect of life there, like everything here shuts down at like 10:30 or 11,
right? Because so, well, and everybody has to drive home, so it's kind of a different vibe.
I think if LA had a better public transit, I would be up till 5 a.m. like everybody else in New York, eating my bagels.
So at UCSD, you guys teach while you're there, right? As graduate students?
We got to teach public speaking, and we got to teach acting, and it was cool. You know, it also opened my eyes that I would love to teach at some point in my life. I love coaching. Yeah. Something that happens, I don't know if this happens in New York a lot, but when my friends get auditions, they're like, oh, can we run them together? Or, you know, specifically if it's comedy, I think people will come to me to run lines. I love it. I love coaching comedy. So I would love to at some point, you know, with my experiences teaching at UCSD, I would love to teach some sort of a comedy, you know, acting course. And I love public speaking. That was such a great tool to have, and I still to this day, you know, at my law firm job, I feel like I've tried to talk to some of the lawyers about, you know, some of the things that we would teach in public speaking, and I don't know, it's become fascinating because I've realized working at this law firm that lawyers and actors kind of like mesh really well together.
Yeah, you oftentimes hear of people who've left acting who decided to become lawyers.
Really?
I've heard of that from, like, alums from Juilliard, because there's that performance aspect to it,
totally.
If you're, like, a trial lawyer.
Yeah, I mean, I would prefer to play one on TV.
Yeah.
But it's interesting being around them. I'm like, gosh, the personalities just mesh really well together. I don't want to be a lawyer, but I would definitely, like, teach or specifically teach like a comedy acting course or something like that. I loved it. It's such a great part of our program, I think, was the teaching undergrad students.
Oh, that's really cool.
It also made you really appreciate, just as an artist and as an actor, how inherently we're just a little bit more open. Public speaking is something that does not come easy to people. As an actor and acting since I was first grade, I don't think it ever occurred to me that public speaking was so difficult for so many people. Mm-hmm. And that's what I loved about teaching the class, is that I was like, whoa, like, not everybody is just naturally like, look at me. I like to be in front of people. Like, a lot of people don't like to be in front of people. So I loved that. I loved exploring that part of people and also bringing it out of people that were super shy, that did not want to be in front of a group of people. Like, all day, my job in LA is to try to get in front of people. Like, all day long is what I'm trying to do. And knowing that I'd say maybe half of the population at least doesn't like that at all, it's kind of interesting. And it was made for really fun teaching. And like, I don't know, it was just a nice little thing that I learned being in grad school about people in general. And my boyfriend's super, super shy. And bless his heart, I'm like, let's do this in front of people. And he's like, let's stay in and watch Stranger Things.
How has that been for you, being in a relationship with someone who's not in the arts?
It's amazing. Yeah. 'Cause it's all about me. No, I'm just kidding. A little bit kidding. It's been really great. You know, I love the look in his face when I come home and he's like, how'd your audition go? And there's like genuine, you know, wonderment in his eyes. And the same, like if I book something, it's just so sweet to have someone who doesn't understand the business at all, but just really appreciates every tiny little step you are taking to get closer to your dream. And that's also another privilege that I have to say that I've had, is being able to follow my dream like that with the support of my family. Again, not everybody gets to do that. Not everybody gets to play for a living, not make any money doing it, and still have your family be like, I love you, you're brilliant.
Well, I was going to ask you about that too, what they make of your life as an actor.
Oh my gosh, my family is so supportive of my career. It's just, I feel so privileged to have the family that I have. You know, there was definitely a time when I first moved to LA where I think maybe they were like, so are you Oprah yet? And like maybe they realized that it was kind of a marathon and not a sprint.
Yeah.
But once they realized that, you know, it was like these tiny steps towards getting closer to your goal, and now it's just nothing but support from them all the time. And, you know, I often called my mom bawling if I don't get a part that I thought I was going to get or that I was really close to getting. And my mom has the most simple advice, and she tells me every damn time, and sometimes I'm like, you don't get it. It's the best advice. And she's like, when it's the right role for you, you will get it. And she says it every single time, every time. And, you know, it kind of goes back to what we were saying before. If it's the right role for me, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to be my best Liz Jenkins, and I am going to get it. Yeah. And she's so right. Like, what a simple piece of advice from someone who doesn't get it at all.
That's really sweet.
It's super sweet. And I, you know, I have to remind myself of that every single time I don't get a role now. I mean, usually I just call her and cry about it and she'll tell me, but mm-hmm. It's such a simple piece of advice. And she doesn't, I don't know if she realizes how brilliant it is specifically for me and my type and who I am as an actor. She's so right. If it's for me, I'm going to get it. And when that happens, it's going to be glorious. It's going to be even better because it was for me. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm blessed and super lucky to have my family and my brothers. You know, both of my brothers are so different than I am, but they think it's so cool, and they're just so cute about it. And one of my brothers is, like, this gun enthusiast, and he loves his guns. And I think the last thing I did, I got shot, and he was like, that was pretty cool.
Thanks, bro. Some
things that impress him. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Fun.
Are your brothers still in Texas or?
Yeah, they're both still in Texas. So I grew up in Houston, and my brother Kevin is in Houston, and my brother Jason is in Dallas.
Okay.
Yeah, I love going home and seeing them, and I feel like I get teased a lot too, because they're like, oh, fancy schmancy LA with your fancy Shih Tzu toy poodle dog. I'll fly with my dog and just be like, oh, you're so fancy. And I'm like, I guess I'm fancy. You guys.
That's what brothers are for.
Exactly.
Teasing.
Exactly.
Can we talk a little bit about, and it also obviously relates to your web series, and you mentioned the law firm, but can we talk a little bit about how you've put together your financial life in LA? Like how you've managed to pay your bills?
Speaking.
Like between acting, yeah.
Yeah, so I should say what I used to do. I used to do freelance everything.
Right.
When I first moved here and I was fired from that doggy daycare, after that, it just dawned on me that I needed to have my hands in everything so I could control my finances better. So I was a nanny, I was a personal assistant, I was cleaning houses, I was doing just about anything you could do on Craigslist to make money, but doing it all freelance. So I had this crazy you know, schedule that I had for myself, and every day I was doing something else, and I kind of loved it, but looking back on it, I really hated it because it was time consuming. Mm-hmm. There was one chunk of time where I had worked, I want to say it was 14 days in a row, like full days of working without a day off, and I didn't even realize it until I was like sick and tired and in a horrible mood, and I looked at my little planner and I was like, oh, you've been working for 14 days straight. I was paying my bills, but I was miserable. So I, a couple of years ago, someone that I personal assisted for opened a law firm and asked if I wanted to be the receptionist there. And I was like, I can't be a receptionist. Like, I have to audition, and auditions are last minute and they're time consuming. And he was so great. He was like, that's fine. I love that you're an actor. Like, you can still do that. Just, you know, we'll work it out. Don't worry about it. And so I worked for that law firm for about a year and a half, and then they split off, and the same lawyer opened another law firm, and that's where I currently work. And he gives me the same exact flexibility. He, like I said, actors and lawyers kind of meshed well. He likes that I'm an actor. He's so kind about it and so supportive about it. So I luckily have a job where I can definitely pay my bills each month and have benefits and be taken care of, but I can also send him an email that's like, oh, I have an audition tomorrow, and the response is, good luck, I hope you book it. You know, it's super nice. Like, that's, I wish so every great actor could have that.
Yeah.
We should have that. Like, I'm getting my work done, and I'm doing it with a smile on my face because I have this really generous boss.
Yeah.
So that's my day job. And then acting is, you know, as always, it's very sporadic, and I make some income doing that. So I knew if we wanted to produce this web series, we would have to do the crowdfunding thing, which mm-hmm. is really scary to sit down and realize that you have to ask your friends for money and donations. So we insisted, I told Molly, and we totally agreed that we have to do like a trailer. Like, the least we could do if we're going to ask people for money is show them what we want to do with the money. And I feel like that's been the best part of the fundraising process. Is the money's great. Thank you everyone who's donated thus far and plans to donate. That has been great, but more so has been people responding to this trailer that we did and just loving it. And I wish that, you know, support equaled money all the time, because if that was the case, we would have $1 million. People have been so supportive of this web series, and specifically this trailer. They've loved it, and that's, I love awesome. That, and it gives me motivation. So, you know, yeah. no matter what, we're going to do it. Like, even if we don't raise all the money that we want to raise, right. we're filming this bad boy, you know.
And people are already excited about it, which is great.
And and people are excited about it. And, you know, I get a lot of emails that are like, oh my gosh, this is so funny, and this is so you. And I'm like, yes, thank you. I'm glad that people know who I am as a person, and I'm glad that that can be reflected on camera. And then I'm also triple glad that then people like it. Like,
yeah.
that's such a gift. We're doing the crowd fundraising. We're going to do some other, like, improv-based fundraisers. I think we're going to have a little improv jam because Molly and I both mm-hmm. do improv. So we're thinking of having people over and, you know, raising money, but also being funny. And I think the other funny thing about the improv world is how many people are interested in it, but are also terrified of it.
Uh-huh.
So doing a fundraiser where we just forces all these people that have asked us, like, how do you do it? Okay, we'll pay $10 and we'll show you. It's super easy. And here's a glass of whiskey, and you're on stage. I think that's going to be a great fundraiser, and it's also just great for it'll be great for me to see all these people that have been curious about it get up there and play. But so, to answer your question, I wish we as artists could get just like, I don't know, grants or something every time we have a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
That would be nice, but I have to say, like, Indiegogo and crowdfunding has been so nice. It's just nice to be able to put it out there. And I'm one of those people that when I see people are also crowdfunding for other things, I also donate. Like, I love that new part of social media that you yeah. can see what your friend is doing across the country and say, oh, I want to donate to that project. I won't be able to see it in person if it's like a theater show or, you know, whatever. But, you know, I support that person with at least this amount of money. and then also them sharing. I feel like even more so than handing over their hard-earned money is them sharing that video, because that to me says that they support it. And that, like I said, is equally as, if not more, rewarding to me that someone supports this project that I'm doing. Yeah. It's hard to think about raising a certain amount of money to be able to film something, but it's also not hard when you have the support that I found that I do.
Definitely one of the positive things about social media for artists.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is like sharing the word of what you're working on, and also the crowdfunding. It's really amazing.
Yeah, I think that's, I've had moments, I wonder if all actors or artists have had these moments of maybe wanting to not be on social media because of some of the negative aspects of it, like comparing yourself to others, or just the, sometimes it can draw focus away from your main goal. But the rewards of it are just way more to me, and the positives of social media are way more. So for that, I feel like I'll always have like a Facebook or whatever they come out with next. I feel like something else has got to come, right?
I'm sure.
Friendster and MySpace and Facebook. Like, what's next?
And Facebook has, you know, it's been around for a while now.
It really has been around for a while, and I love it. I'm just so curious. My brain doesn't work that way, so I can't tell you what it would be, but there might be something else.
Is there anything in the last couple of years that you're really proud of that you want to tell me about? Could be like something little or some lesson you learned, or doesn't have to be obvious.
I think something that I'm really proud of is probably a change in thought process. I wouldn't say it's one specific thing, but it's more so the way I approach my career as an actor and how that's changed that I'm really proud of. And I think I sound really redundant right now, but it is just that thought of bringing myself to everything I do in the acting world and auditions, even in my personal life and my job. I feel like the more I can be myself, the less hard I can be on myself when things don't pan out, because then I don't have any regrets. And so I think that way of thinking is something that I'm really proud of. I'm also really proud of the little life that I've created for myself in LA. Like, I have a cute little dog, and I have a boyfriend who's super supportive, and I have a family that's really supportive, and I have friends all around me that are really supportive, and friends that I support, and, you know.
Yeah.
I think I am proud of that.
And that's huge.
It's funny. Yeah, it's funny because I was looking at, I want to say at the end of undergrad is when we made these lists of like these goals that we're supposed to have for our careers. It was like a 2-year goal, 5-year goal, and like a 10-year goal or something like that. And I didn't realize how like easy I was on myself about my goals, because my 10-year goal was like be on TV once. Have a job. Like, it was very, I was super easy on myself, and I think I did that for a good reason, because now I can look back and be like, yeah, I think those things are actually, the things that I have in my life right now are actually harder to obtain and be appreciated than we think. So when I look back at this little, I think the 20-year goal is when it gets crazy. It's like, have an Oscar award. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. that's coming up quick. But, yeah, those things I knew, you know, 10, 12 years ago, I knew thinking ahead that at least I would want to appreciate those little things. And I do appreciate those little things. And I'm really proud of that part of my life, is just being able to appreciate my little life with my little dog and my boyfriend and my family, and auditioning whenever I want and being myself. That's a lot.
That is a lot. And kind of like we talked about a little bit before we started recording, like, those are the things that are going to keep you happy and grounded when your career isn't doing what you want.
Oh,
and that's important.
Gosh, totally. Totally. I mean, I had, like, a good cry the other day because I think I didn't book something. I always have a good cry when I don't book something. Not always, but, you know, I think when you think you're going to book something and you don't book something, that's when I have a cry. And it was so nice to just be able to sit on my bed with my boyfriend giving me a hug and basically saying what my mom says, but I don't think he knows that, which is just like, you're going to get something. Like, you're so funny and you're so confident. Like, when it's the right role, you'll get it. I mean, that ridiculous basic advice is like all I need to hear because it's so true. Like, patience, it's like very, very important. Patience and just really accepting that you are enough and that one day that role, you're going to walk into a room, someone's going to look at you, you're going to look at your headshot, and they're going to be like, yes. And that's like kind of what we're just waiting for.
Oh my gosh.
And it'll happen.
You are inspiring me so much right now.
You inspire me all the time. I love chatting with you. I really do. I think I miss grad school so much because I miss just being in that space with, I felt like it was almost like this weird, funky version of the real world because it was
you're...
like these people that you maybe not necessarily
trapped together 24 hours a day.
Yeah, and I loved it. And we were all kind of on the same page about things sometimes, and sometimes we weren't. But at the end of the day, we were all so supportive of each other. And I love that I can still, you know, see you years later.
I know. That's the great thing about Facebook. Is that we only see each other every couple of years, but I still feel involved in your life and what you're doing, and it's really nice.
Yeah. I do. I agree. It is very nice. I mean, thanks, Mark Zuckerberg.
Thanks. Okay, I don't want to keep you too long, but I have two more quick questions.
Sure.
The first one is, like, when you are feeling down and depressed or not confident, are there any like specific things that you turn to again and again, like a book or music or a specific thing you like to do?
Dark chocolate.
Yes.
And I think talking to people.
Yeah.
It's just the right people. I definitely like reaching out to people who are in the same space as we are, and just like what we're doing now, just like kind of bitching about the industry a little bit, and then it always ends up circling right back around to like why we do it. Mm-hmm. Like, if we could do anything else, surely we would be doing it. We don't want to be rejected all day long. Like, if we could do something else, I think we'd all be doing it, but this is what makes us happy, and that's kind of like where the conversation always circles back around to. So that and some dark chocolate is like, I mean, perfect. That's all I need.
Great. And then I also wanted to ask if you have anything that you've seen recently that you want to recommend, either something live in LA or a movie or whatever, a book.
What have I seen lately? Well, nothing. No, I'm just kidding. No, I've seen so many like different types of things that I'm trying to figure out which one I would really, really recommend.
Or if there's even like a specific place that you like to go see comedy in LA or something that you would recommend to people who live out there.
You know what I would recommend? This is kind of sort of your question. I actually would recommend that people hop into an improv class.
Yeah.
Absolutely see a show. But more so than anything, just go take a class. Like, so many people have told me they're so afraid of it for whatever reason, nerves or the idea of, like, having to think of stuff on the spot. But whether you're an actor or not, I feel like improv is so, so much fun. And a lot of these schools, they're the first day of class, they're like, don't try to be funny. And I think that's what scares people from improv class, is they think they're not funny, so they don't want to go and embarrass themselves. But as someone who's taken a couple of different classes from different schools, the funniest people to me in those classes are the people that have never done it before. And it's because they're doing that one piece of advice, which is they're not trying to be funny.
Right.
And I love it. So I would say, I guess that's, you know, the one thing I would tell people, if you've ever thought about taking improv, or even if you've seen a show and you're like, I could never do that, like, go to UCB, go to the Groundlings, go to Second City, go to Iowa West, and just take a class. They're so much fun. And especially if you're an actor and artist, you're going to get something out of it. You're going to start booking commercials and getting facts, because that's kind of what they want. They all kind of want you to be able to think on your feet and not try so hard. And that's kind of improv.
Yeah.
So I guess I would say that. And that's great totally advice. Go see a show. They're always so funny. That's like the best cheap comedy you can get, is popping to an improv theater and seeing a show.
Awesome.
Yeah. Liz,
thank you. You just made my day. Thank you.
Oh, you made my day. You're chatting with me. This has been so much fun. I'm like being interviewed by my dear friend. It's just like a nice little Friday thing.
Let's do it every week.
Oh my gosh, okay.
Thank you for listening to the Compass Podcast. I'm Leah Walsh. More episodes are coming soon. Please look for us on Facebook and iTunes. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller. Music by Brendan Spieth. Audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.